ישראלסין.com ומעולם רחוק מלא נגוהות שמשות שם רחבות קיים וכוכבים כאור שמשנו על פני רקיע אבן ספיר שם. From a distant world full of illumination, the suns there are as broad as the ocean, the stars like the light of our sun on the face of the sapphire stone. There. Besorot liagil kitlalim leim tzuf panag nihaluni le'eden ne'elam sham chevyon ha'onek. The news reaches me like dew full of the delight of heaven, guiding me to the hidden Eden. There, the treasure is stored. Sham chevyon ha'onek. Chol panim sham alizim, v'chol peh yashir shirei tehila, v'nizkavot yachush, kol lev v'chol raglaim mefazezot begila. All the faces there are joyful, every mouth is singing songs of praise, the highest feelings fill each heart, and all the legs are dancing in jubilation. Avar ve'atid kisefer niglal ein satum akol yadua chol nefesh mle'a ahava lakol v'chushim la'alafim ve'or zarua. Past and the future are scrolled as one, nothing is hidden, everything is known, every soul is full of love for all, feelings for the multitudes, and the light is sown. Ve'or zaru. Chol avarim shotfim kinchalim v'toar v'zoar u'gvura v'or v'chaim ra'ananim v'chofesh u'dror memulaim b'chol higayon u'mifalim. All the pasts flow like rivers. Illumination, strength, purity, and light, life renewed, freedom and liberation fills all our thoughts and activities. Uve'en more u'madrich shofet vasar. Akol tov, akol bahir. Ein ivut, ein ikum, akol yashar. Lelaila ki yom ya'ir. And without teachers, guides, judges, or politicians, everything is good. Everything is clear. There's no crookedness. There's no corruption. Everything is with integrity. Akol yashar. Yashar is the way of Israel. Israel. Shirel. V'halayla keyom yair. And then the night will shine like the day. לעולם זה נפשי שואפת ובחיים כאלה רוחי מרחפת. To a world such as this, my soul longs. In life such as this, my spirit soars. לעולם זה נפשי שואפת ובחיים כאלה רוחי מרחפת. And that was by Rav Kook, of course, to give you an indication of the extraordinary creativity and consciousness that is within those words. Okay, so let's go around and just say hello. I'm sure, I don't know if everybody knows everybody, but if you do it, and good. So I'm Yitzchak.
I'm Steve.
And all right. So the focus. I want to follow the framework that I introduced. And if we look at the piece that we started with, which is the fourfold song, the level, the third level of the fourfold song, the first level being that we sing the song of our own, and maybe Melanie makes sense if you move sort of in the middle of that, more further to the end.
Yeah. Circle is the Jewish way. Even if it's a square circle. Okay. So the first level of the divine name. Welcome to. Welcome. No, but I don't want you to. Face to face, though, is good. Face to face. You know, there's an awful lot of Torah, and I'm sure we may come across it in something today, but it's about the face to face as being the key to the best and the highest. So, in this sense, we have an evening at Beit HaRav in the Beit Midrash. There's a Hebrew speaking, so more a little bit more lecture format. And there, you know, the practice is Beit HaRav, the men are one, so, you know, separate men. So I decided, and I think I was asked to, sort of, but gently, it doesn't really matter. But so I have it, but I have it like yin-yang. So we learn, like the idea is not separated, but really face-to-face. And
you need to really get that message out there right now, because now I've seen it, and I know other parents have told me, you know, children are texting each other across the room. They're not speaking, they're not looking.
That's scary. If it's across the room, it's scary.
We know a very couple who did that. They were playing games, you know, these Dungeon and Dragon type things. They were sitting next to each other and going into the internet ethers, doing exactly what you were telling us about.
All right. So
the marriage did not last.
The level that we're on is actually at top of the sheet you have, the Rav Kook Revolution, Session 3. Ve'yesh asher od, the context being, the first song is the song of our own soul, the second song is the song of our Ummah, the song of Israel. And now, Yesh asher od titrachev nafsho, ad sheyotze v'mitpashet mi'al gvul Israel, lashir et shirat ha'adam. There is the one, there is that part of us that expands our being to the point that we go beyond the boundary of Israel to sing the song of humankind. Our spirit extends and broadens in its huge oneness, klalut, the begaon klalut, ruho holech v'mitrachev begaon klalut ha'adam va'od samo. Our spirit expands into the level of joining the great klal. And the genius, it's really like getting the best of the all, the great klal of all of the human and the human's glorious visage. So, shoef, so it's universalism, right? Shoef el teudato haklalit. At that point, we aspire for its highest destiny, its universal destiny to be come forth. And we look forward to its most highest fulfillment. And from this source of life, from this level of inspiration and aspiration, the person draws their all their thoughts and investigations, she'ifotav v'chizyonotav, his aspirations and his visions. And we put our life energy to goals, to doing something that is the song of humankind. And we you know, and cure cancer and all the things that are humankind song that are need to happen. And that's the next level. And the expansion is the yud and the hey. Yud and the hey and the vav, starting with the yud. This is the unfolding of the full name of God, according to the Zohar, according to Torah. Okay, so that's the context. That's the level we're visiting for the first part today. Now, it seems appropriate to contextualize, because the first piece is something that he wrote in 1895 in one of his early diaries, and I just came across it last week in my Chavrusa in Jerusalem, and it's very, very interesting. And I thought, and I'll share it, we'll look at it in a minute, but I want to contextualize it. We're in Erev Tisha B'Av. Tomorrow night is Tisha B'Av. What is the root of Tisha B'Av? Where did Tisha B'Av first come from? What created Tisha B'Av? What brought Tisha B'Av into the world?
Where it came from?
Yeah, what was the first evening of significant evening of Tisha B'Av when everybody was crying because of the terrible tragedy?
The Second Temple was destroyed, wasn't it?
Earlier.
Oh, earlier.
Well, okay, that's a reasonable answer. I'm thinking now, let's think of earlier.
I don't know.
Before the temple?
Before the temple, yeah.
I'll
give you a hint. No Medrash says that was on Tisha B'Av. There's one evening in the story of the Chumash, the Moses in the desert, Dvarim, the whole thing. It's one story which the event took place on Tisha B'Av, which is?
Oh, wait a minute. There was a
day. Moshe referred to it this last Parsha yesterday, Parsha Dvarim.
Wait a minute. Somebody died.
Everybody always dies. That's not good enough. That's not. That's true. Yes. Yes, but that doesn't. That's not specific enough. During the exit from Mitzrayim, they were about to enter the land of Israel.
Oh, the spies, of course.
And God says in the first version, in Parshat Bamidbar, God says, and send people latur et haaretz, to look at the land, and they'll tell you this and that and this and that, if this and that. In the story we read this week, Moshe says the way it happened is, and you came and asked me as we were approaching, what's it like? Let us send people. So I used to ask God, and he said, okay. I thought it was a good idea, and I asked God, and you went and did it, but then you came back with this report that created 40 years, delay. The entire 40 years, right? The end of Parsha, if you look at the chronology in the Torah, Bamidbar, there's like 38 years whizzes by. There's a few things that happen, and then they're just sitting there waiting. That's the chronology. Waiting for that generation to pass on. And the Midrash, and the night that they came back, according to the biblical counting, was the 9th of Av, in the year of the first year of their exodus from Egypt.
And they cried.
They cried that night, and the Midrash says, you made everybody cry, and you also prevented everybody from coming into the land of Israel when it was completely just open for you. Oh, Nebuch, this cross, this karma of Tchiyah LeDorot, right? Karma of crying for generations. And so, poof, here it is that in our history we've had this Tisha B'Av. Now, certain ones we do know happened on Tisha B'Av, but Midrashic is... You know, I'm sure at least the first temple must have happened. It happened on Tisha B'Av, there's no question. They're so that precise about it. The second temple also. The expulsion from Spain was on Tisha B'Av. And World War I broke out on Tisha B'Av. So, but that's an interesting one because there's a midrash that contextualizes modern Rav Kook and Rav Kook's vision, and it's very important. It's based on the Vilna Gaon, and let me share a little bit from the Nazir introducing Rav Kook on the process of Mashiach. And the reason for that is because just Tisha B'Av is when Mashiach is born. Right? Tisha B'Av afternoon. That's what the Midrash is, and we very strongly, in the greatest darkness, Kabbalah says is the greatest light, Mashiach is born. And so he says like this, the liberation of Israel, Tchiyat Medinat Israel, the renewal of the state of Israel. This is the Nazir writing sometime between 1967 and 71. Because he passed away in 1972. And he says like this, for the sake of time, I'll just read in English. The liberation of Israel, the renewal, the revival of the state of Israel is being accompanied with the renewal and the revival of the spirit of Israel, the renewal of the holy, Tchiyat HaKodesh. We saw this with our own eyes in the day of the liberation from Jerusalem, that everyone from Israel, when he came to the temple, to the holy wall, to the western wall, to Har HaBayit, that was then freed that day, he covered their head and they put their face and they cried and they cried and they cried. He was the first one invited there. He was the father-in-law of Rav Shmuel Milgoron, so he was brought in the first jeep there and was the carrier of this prophetic tradition, because Rav Kook first arrived in the land of Israel on the 28th day of Iyar, the same day that is Yom Yerushalayim, right? That's another detail. But then he says, listen, Israel, Shema Yisrael, Geulat Yisrael, listen, Israel, the liberation of Israel, the sparks of light of the Mashiach, the renewal of the spirit of Israel. And then he says, the light, quoting the Zohar, the light of the liberation is sparking, coming stars, little, and afterwards it grows and it grows. And then Rav Kook tells us, he says, we're called in the deepest part of our soul to feel this even now, even though it's just sending up little lights. We're called to really feel it and to really hold on to it. Anu muchrachim litfos miyad et ha'ora gdola. We have to grab right away this great light because it's the light of the future, and that's how we bring it into the present. And if we understand that that's what's going, and we open our eyes and we see things in that way, then we're doing it. And he goes on, and then he says, and he speaks about speaking to the Chafetz Chaim, who was Rav Kook's Rebbe. And the Chafetz Chaim was the one who started the people studying for the temple, because he says, I know it's going to happen. And he has a conversation here that the Chafetz Chaim had with him, and I think I referred to it, that brought him to study the Beit HaMikdash. Anyways, I'll try to cut this short rather than, but it connects to this piece. And then he says, so, you know, we see this happening, and the people are starting to study the Hilchot Beit HaMikdash, and the Chafetz Chaim says, you're going to see it in your lifetime, some more of it. I can't see any of it, but it's coming for sure. You'll see. And then he says, and then he goes, and Hinei, behold, on the 9th of Av, in 1914, came forth the First World War. The land of Israel was conquered by the British over the Ottomans. And there was the Balfour Declaration, which Rav Kook was instrumental in making happen in London. The land of Israel to Israel, the beginning of the Geula. And then he goes Kabbalistic. Wars, the war of Gog and Magog, and Armilus Arasha. Armilus Arasha is like this guy who was the emperor of Rome in the days of Mashiach ben Yosef. There'll be a period of war. And Lesof Yeherag, Velesof Yeherag Armilas al Yedei Mashiach ben David. And in the end, Armilas will be killed by Mashiach ben David. He'll be fighting Mashiach ben Yosef. And then the Geula will be Shlema. That's the Nazir putting two Medrashes together. As it says, and this is a This is the Medrash, but it's one that all the Kabbalists are very, very informed by. It informs modern Jewish Kabbalistic theology, so it's important to know, and it's really all about Tisha B'Av. It says in the Midrash, it says where it is and stuff. V'kein, okay, al Mashiach ben Yosef sheyihargenu, he'll also kill, Mashiach ben Yosef will be killed, is the other part of it, and then Mashiach ben David will come. So that's the Medrash. There's going to be the Mashiach from the line of Yosef, and Mashiach from the line of David, and the Mashiach, the one of Yosef, is going to be killed, and then the final Geulah will be brought. So it's a two-step Mashiach. And that's from the early things, and the Ari expanded, and the Vilna Gaon wrote volumes on it. And spoke volumes of it. And so Rav Kook understood contemporary history in that light. And so when he arrived here in 1904 and Herzl died, he addressed the Israel at that time, and he told, that's what always, he never mentioned Herzl by name. I think I mentioned this. He didn't mention Herzl by name. He simply he spoke about this teaching, that there's a Mashiach ben Yosef, and that's the one that's going to put in the infrastructure and get people to come, make Aliyah and build roads and all that activity, seeing Herzl and the entire Zionistic effort in that perspective. And then he explains about this transformation of Mashiach ben Yosef will be killed and Mashiach ben David will come. The spirit will fill the vessel. Once we create the physical vessel, then our spiritual connections will occur almost inevitably. All right, that's the context. Now, in 1895, he said like this, Mashiach ben Yosef, and if you want to follow along, it's you see the letters, 1895, Pinkas Acharon Bebois. This is the last notebook that he wrote in Bois. That's what it's called. So just let me ask, how important, because I had some correspondence with somebody, is it to go through the Hebrew and the English? For whom is that?
It takes such a long time to understand the Hebrew. I mean, I can do it, but the English is actually better for me.
Because I can go straight to the English, and then we can, because...
Yeah, because then maybe there's time for questions and discussions and stuff.
Yes, I understand. Let's go with that and see. Though sometimes it's impossible not to, because it's like jewels.
I know.
But here he says, so I'll give you a running translation of what he said, Robert, okay?
So where are we reading from?
I'm reading from 1895. But I'm just going, I'm going to just read it in English, as if it's English. The Messiah, the son of Yosef, is the quality of le'umiyut Israel, Israeli nationalism, nationism, for its own sake. And since the final purpose isn't the national forming of just national groups, but the final purpose of history is the aspiration to unite everybody in the world into one family. And while this requires a special center for this activity, the purpose of that center is not just for its own sake, but for its activity on the entire collective, on the entire all. Therefore, when the world needs to come to the transformation from nationalism to universalism, I mean le'umiyut el haklalut, it needs to also have some sort of disruption of those things that were rooted in the side of narrow nationalism. The narrow nationalism has to be uprooted, it has to be killed. Mashiach ben Yosef is that narrow nationalism, when it's just for Yosef's own people.
He's not mentioning here any particular religion. He's talking universal. was to bring everybody in to this part of his, this ideal state of his? Or is he just talking about the Jews and the Jews out in this world?
Well, I mean, he's ultimately talking about the aspiration to unite everybody in the world to one family. That's pretty explicit. Humanity. Yeah. Kol baye olam. Please.
So with the destruction of the narrow nationalism, is it an eruption, or is it just an organic process moving from nationalism? Nationalism into a more universality. I mean, that's there's a process too. I mean, that could take for whatever time it takes.
Well, following this model is that it's about integration, but the way to do it is to be Israel to your most greatest capacity. It's the perfection of Israel. Once we've done that, then we can step forth into that role. It requires the complete integration of step one and step two, and it's about Israel being Israel. He doesn't necessarily say it here, but there's another one that I saw today that you have the sheets there that are clear about that. Yeah.
Is showing that we're in a struggle right now between I'm a better Jew than you are, or I'm a real Jew and you're not, or religious Zionist or Amilak.
We're in lots of struggles. We're like the two tribes, two tribes and a little bit of the other ten. But
it's part of the process. I can see if I step back that it is part of the total process, but it's because we're not talking about it right now nationalism. I mean, it's kind of moved it's moved out of that into who are we? What, how do we define ourselves spiritually, and who is or isn't? And that just appears to be a struggle that's
For sure, and that's all part of that's just part of history and part of our struggle, and the challenge to come to unification and to come to harmony is the raw pieces of it, the raw material of it. It's happening though. Our capacity to be universal, as we'll see, that I'll show you something in this piece where he says, well, let's just go to it, I guess. It's because since I'm doing it in English, it's the other sheet that I have there, and Sofei Yeshuat Olam BeYisrael, the visionaries of universal liberation in Israel. And he says there are righteous people like this, and people of, and righteous isn't somebody else, it's our part of ourselves that are so great that they can't put themselves into just Knesset Israel alone, and they're always worried and wanting the good for the entire world. And in every place, though, they're also kshurim, they're connected in their inner nekudah strongly into Knesset Israel, because Knesset Israel represents the essence of it's like, you know, the concentrate, that's the word, the concentrate of good and klali. And so behahava v'tova shetavo leKnesset Yisrael, and in the love and the good that is brought to Knesset Yisrael, chozeret hi v'makefet et kol ha'etzor, that will bring forth, return and surround the entire creation. And then he says specifically, look at this language, these type of righteous can't call themselves nationalists, le'umim, according to the external meaning of the word. They can't stand any sort of hatred and any sort of injustice, any sort of limitation of the good and the compassion. They want to be good for everything, and that's the quality of God. Right? They hear a little bit of anything about non-Jew or anything. That's how can you? So on and so forth. And he says that's very, very, that's the ideal. And so, so let's continue back into this piece to finish this thought, this one here, because if that's the ideal, this says something about how to get there. So when the world needs to make the transformation from nationalism to universality, there needs to be the destruction of things that are rooted from the side of narrow nationalism that has this shortcoming. What's the problem with narrow nationalism, strong Zionism? Ahava ha-pratit ha-yeterah. Too much, yoter midai, ahava pratit. Love of your own private, particular group, you know? Too much of that. Therefore, atid Mashiach ben Yosef, Mashiach ben Yosef is destined to be murdered and the killed, and the true kingdom will exist forever of Mashiach ben David. And then he takes it one step further, based on God. And we find that they're getting rid of Yetzer Hora, the Yetzer Hora, evil in every person, getting rid of evil in every, and the destruction, the murder of Mashiach ben Yosef are close to each other, in which we're able to negate our desire to just be in our national groups because of our greater desire and passion for universal good. So that'll be the main impulse.
How do you get there from
here? Well, step by step. And then he says one more step after that. Once humankind is able to do that, yeh mevu'ar yetzer hara, Araya Mervoir. That's what Ra, evil, will be burnt out from the individuals, and therefore there's even a discussion in the Gemara when it says Mashiach ben Yosef is killed, whether it means the person of Mashiach ben Yosef, or is it even larger than that, it's the Yetzer Hara that's killed. And then finally Malchut David. That's the theological discussion that the Kabbalists have been having about this period of history. The Vilna Gaon wrote a lot about that he was in the period of Mashiach ben Yosef. And so here Rav Kook is taking it now, okay, this is the next step. But we have to understand that narrow nationalism, that's a pretty amazing for 1895.
Is he actually talking about the narrowness of the group mentality within our set up here in Israel? We have many.
Everybody's narrow. That's in itself a sign how narrow everybody is. It's very all these factors.
I mean, I've been reading from the English.
Sure.
And that's one of the things he says over and over again, a little bit I've read.
Yeah.
That superficial study sometimes narrows thought, but it aborts first. And it aggravates the sickness of narrowness of thought. With all one's strength, one must still break oneself from this and to free the soul from its narrow confines, to redeem it from each other.
Oh yeah. So I bless us, here we are, to understand that this is saying that the narrow nationalism, whichever way Zionism is narrow, whichever way Zionism, nationalism in Israel is narrow, it can't be. So that's a very interesting way to understand the flow of history. And Baruch Hashem, though, you were saying about how we get there, I see so many signs of it in certain panim, because Israel is having the most extraordinary blending of energy with all the worlds of high tech and this and that and medicine and everybody. It's extraordinary. The level of interaction that takes place between Israelis and Israelis that are now in other countries but who were trained here, And but they're still, they're representatives. They're mamish. They really are. And so I think, you know, there's a, that sort of internationalism of Israel. That, I mean, Jerusalem, you know, the religious aren't doing it, but everybody else is.
You
and Tel Aviv is doing it. That's why it's so nice to come here.
You can look from the outside and see, you know, you can look at it and see it in a very negative light, you know, this fighting, this struggle, but the struggle and the fighting and the wrestling, in a sense, with God is what makes the changes, what allows for all, and in this small place is so vibrant in so many different ways. I mean, and we struggle even here with dealing with the other, you know, without the fear. And that's the fear, regardless how it manifests, it always constricts your consciousness, constricts your understanding, and limits us. And we're all struggling with that. In many ways, it's an amazing and exciting time. I mean,
plus, yeah, now's the time if there's no limitations anymore. Mm-hmm. It's really within our jurisdiction, whatever. You know, it's like amazing. So with that, that is probably, I want to draw your attention for the next piece that we continue in this process. But we can ask everybody, it's in the English. And it's if you have it, it's in the larger packet. I'll find it, let me find it, it's in this packet. It's in this packet. And it's the third, there it is. It's the about five pages in. And it's the heading is The Moral Principles, and Love is the title.
Okay.
So I want to, in the Hebrew, we have the English excerpts from some of them, but we can read it directly in the English, and we can even read it in circle. So we can, brother, why don't you read number one? First of all, context. This was an early book of Rav Kook published that came out, Midot HaRaya, and it was published, I think, through by his son. He said it was one of the early ones that came out, but he doesn't have it. He has it as later, but it's again from his diaries, selections chosen by, I think, his son, in this case. The other selections, the Nazir and his son. Anytime, this particularly, I think this was published in his lifetime. That's why, in his lifetime would have been before 1930. The heart must, oh please.
The heart must be filled with love for all. The love of all creation comes first. Then comes the love for all mankind, and then follows the love for the Jewish people, in which all other loves are included, since it is the destiny of the Jews to serve toward the perfection of all things. All these loves are to be expressed in practical action, by pursuing the welfare of those we are bidden to love, and to seek their advancement. But the highest of all loves is the love of God, which is love in its fullest maturity. This love is not intended for any derivative ends. When it fills human heart, this itself spells man's greatest happiness.
All right. So, notice the order. Love creation, the love for humankind, and then the love for Jewish people. And love for God. It's interesting to note that the word in Hebrew, Ahava, is structured very much like the name of God. Yud, He, Vav, He, Aleph, He, Bet, He. The Yud and the Vav are then transformed into the Aleph, Bet, and so forth. And so Ahava is one of the Hitgashmiyot of the divine. Okay, so then I think we shall... makes sense. Let's read number five then. That was number five. Do you want to read number five, please?
Okay. All right. The love for people must be alive in heart and soul. The love for
people and of all nations, expressing itself in a design for their spiritual and material advancement. Hatred may direct itself only towards the evil and the filth in the world. One cannot reach the exalted position of being able to recite the verse from the morning prayer, praise the Lord, invoke his name, declare his works amongst the nations, without experiencing the deep inner love stirrings, ones who are solicitous for all nations, to improve their material state, to promote their happiness. This disposition qualifies the Jewish people to experience the spirit of the Mashiach. Whenever in our classic tradition we encounter allusions to hatred, clearly the reference is to the phenomenon of evil, which has disrupted by force the unity of many nations at the present time, and certainly in ancient times when the world was in much lower moral state. But we must realize that the life process, its inherent light and holiness, never leaves a divine image, with which each person and each nation have been endowed, each according to its level of qualification. And this nucleus of holiness will uplift all. It is because of this perspective on life that we are concerned for fullest progress to prevail in the world, for the ascent of justice, merge with beauty and vitality, for the perfection of all creation, commencing with man, in all the particular groupings for which he functions. This is the essence that lies at the heart of the Jewish outlook, so that, by the grace of God, we are now reviving our practical and spiritual community.
Okay. Comments? Yeah. Well, the next, okay, so that if there's no comment, we can just, number six, please.
The degree of love in the soul of the righteous embraces all creatures, excludes nothing, and no people or tongue. Even the wicked Amalek's name is to be erased by the biblical injunction only from under the heavens. But through cleansing, he may be erased to the source of the good, which is above the heavens, is then included in the higher love. For one needs great strength and a lofty state of purity for this exalted kind of unification.
Okay, so even Amalek, there's no limit whatsoever to love of humankind and to the aspiration and the vision and the goal of love. And then in number 10, he continues, I mean, it's all interesting, but number 10 is, please.
I had a quick question.
Please.
The footnote that is really interesting.
Yeah.
Is that he says, could believe it's high its source, the origin of good, like evil is just a good deed that kind of became distorted.
Let's read it. Cook believed that an evil deed is an impulse that at its highest source of origin was good, but became distorted and went astray. It's an expansion of that, or this is at the core of that, that at the highest source of origin of everything in the world is Tov. Ra is a lower level of the manifestation. And so the understanding is, and we'll get to this next week more, because next week we'll be dealing with this principle of Tov. It's that, yeah, that's what the Kabbalah teaches us, that the Ra, the higher source of Ra is Tov, and it's like going through this filter and suddenly goes this way and all that. But what gives us hope is that it does, even that is sourced back in original good.
But then how does one judge truly evil acts as kind of, like, how would you see something like, say, the Holocaust or such as, like, a distortion of good intention? You know, like, that's kind of, because then it gets really complicated, right?
It does get very complicated, however, I'll quote from you, I'm trying to find it here, I think I read this part last week, but he has the thing in which he says that the story, give me one second. I used to be very fast with this book, but now it's sweet to come back to this book. But he says that, if I do it Baal Peh, the Midrash that the children of Haman taught Torah in Bnei Brak, and that the descendants of Sisera taught Torah in Jerusalem, right? Haman, the evil, you know, the Hitler, Haman is descendant of Hitler. That Midrash is that the descendants of Haman will be Torah teachers in Bnei Brak. And Rav Kook says that, and you have the quote with you in that, it could actually be missing in this one, that this teaches us not to be caught up in the stream of hatred even of our fiercest enemy.
Even what?
Yeah. Of our fiercest enemy. Ah. Not to be caught up in the storm of hatred even of the fiercest enemy. It means, I mean, it doesn't mean that you still have to complain, you have to kill them if you need to, da-da-da-da-da, you need to do what you need to do. But he gives guidance, which is not that taking, we don't, thank you, number 10. You want to read number 10? Or you can read, you guys can share it if you feel like sharing. It's a long one.
Much effort is needed to broaden the love for people to the proper level in which it must pervade life at its fullest depth. This must be done in opposition to the superficial view which suggests itself initially on the basis of inadequate study of the Torah and of conventional morality, and where it would seem as though there is a contradiction to such love, or at least indifference to it. The highest level of love for people is the love due the individual. It must embrace every single individual, regardless of differences in views of religion or differences of race or climate. It is essential to understand the mentalities of different nations and groupings, to study their characteristics and lifestyles, in order to know how to base our human love on foundations that will readily translate themselves into action. It is only a person rich in love for people and a love for each individual person who can reach the love for his own nation in its noblest dimension, spiritually and practically. The narrow-mindedness that leads one to view whatever is outside a particular nation, even what is outside the Jewish people, as ugly and defiling, is a phase of the frightful darkness that undermines altogether every effort to reach that state of spiritual development whose dawn is awaited by every sensitive spirit.
Tzarot Ayin is what he calls the Tzarot Ayin. You have the piece here. Tzarot Ayin, that causes you to see everything that's outside the boundary of Israel. It's like Ki'ur v'tum'ah, the ugliness and impurity. Yameh machashchim hanoraim. That's one of the great, awful, awful, nora, darknesses that cause great destruction, complete destruction to a good spiritual structure. So you could be the holiest people in the world and you know, da-da-da-da-da. But keeping in that frame, that and that attitude, to look at things outside chutz ma'al gvul ha'uma ha-meyuchedet, the special nation, chutz mi'gvul Israel. So this is Mashiach ben David. This is Gan Eden speaking, in which we really take seriously that we're all one family, and Avra and so forth. The next one that we can look in this is just look at number 12. It's just the about half a third. Well, I want to read just from. You see where it says the whole Torah? It's about a third of the way down. The whole Torah, all its moral teachings, Kol HaTorah, HaMusar, HaMitzvah, the commandments, HaMa'aseh VeHaTa'almud, the act and the learning. Right, the entire thing, not just part of it, the entire thing, Heim Ba'im Lifnot Et Michshulei HaDrachim. This comes to move the path, the obstacles in the path. Shetuchal ahavat olamim zot lehit olame olamim zot lehit pashet, that this universal love of all the worlds can spread forth, lehitrachev al kol kirkirei hachaim, to spread to all corners of life, to all the squares of life, where everybody lives. al kol merachveim, to all their expanses. The entire Torah has as its objective to remove the roadblocks so that universal love should be able to spread and to extend to all realms of life. The fruits generated from the roots of this supremely holy love comprise the good and upright qualities, the particular and the general, the personal and the social. Until we reach a state where the world is judged by righteousness and nations by equity.
That I noticed is in number three.
Pardon me?
This is really important, I think.
Please.
In number three on this whole thing on love.
Yeah.
Where we started out.
Yeah.
That hit me.
Which?
You cannot but love equity and righteousness. So how do you access this love that is just coming in as a shefa, unless maybe you have something in you that responds to fairness, equity, and righteousness? I mean, how do you build on a human being?
We all do.
Well, then it's important to foster that, I would think. Because otherwise, we have people who are universalists, and it becomes very corrupted. It becomes a tyranny if you're not careful. And
yeah,
it's problematic for me. Yeah, there are utopians, and I think they
but he's also speaking about the hard work. He says it takes you have to put great effort.
Just follow the Torah.
But the Torah also mentions like 30 some odd times, be kind to the ger, which is the person who's dead.
No. This is where we are going to reach this. That's the whole messianic Ben David thing, is that this is all pictures of where the world is coming to. Otherwise, we wouldn't even bother trying. That's the working assumption, and that's the working assumption. I can read you some descriptions of I think the Nazir. There's a beautiful little thing, the Lights of the Mashiach, where I think it describes how great it's going to be. But here he says love is the tool of it. And our capacity to be able to transcend our national identity, or to express the universal within our national identity, which is I think he's explicit. I'm trying to think if there's something we may have skipped here that is worth just. It's probably not. Core to this is the understanding that the true mission of Israel is the universal mission. Abraham was a universalist, and we're at the service of his universalism. As that's what Israel really is. The narrow Mashiach ben Yosef energy is that energy which, and thank God for it. We couldn't be here if not for the what needed to happen, and what they did and are doing, whatever it makes to survive, as Yosef did in ensuring the survival of Egypt.
So are you saying the physical state of Israel and the whole organization
is all Mashiach ben Yosef platform,
and
Mashiach ben Yosef activity.
The spirit of Abraham.
And for the spirit of Abraham, but
as a universalist.
But they put it in the words of King David. It's in Ezekiel. Prophecy is in Ezekiel, where it's the staff of Yosef. I think Ben Ephraim. It says no. It's named Yosef, and the staff of Yehuda will come together. And that's sort of the whole thing in the whole story, and that's the source of part of this Mashiach ben Yosef. Because there's another midrash in which the Vilna Gaon adds, but the thing about Mashiach ben Yosef dying, it's not necessarily has to happen. Let's pray that it doesn't happen. And there were a whole stream of these people that in their prayer at a certain point have added that prat that no, Mashiach ben Yosef should not die.
Maybe he'll become irrelevant.
Well, it's a fusion. It's a beautiful fusion of the physical and the material, is what it's
but
about.
But if there is this...
So then it's not irrelevant. It's not at all irrelevant. But, you
no,
know.
No, no.
And Yosef was beautiful, right? It was described as beautiful being. And so it's about, physicality.
Yeah, but he was a very effective at the physical level. And what I'm suggesting is perhaps everybody will be in a state where the specificity of us as Jews in this territory will be diminished in terms of how well the other world, rest of the world, is doing.
By their improvement.
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
So, in a sense, it's not as relevant.
Give me 1 minute, and then we'll take a break, to give you a little bit parts of this one, that I just started the last one, that'll be a good sort of... lead into follow what you just said, because he's describing the people that can't limit themselves only into the Knesset Israel, and they can't be national on the basis of the external tochen of the word. They can't stand any sort of injustice to anybody, Jewish, non-Jewish, completely irrelevant to them. And he says, and I'm going to summarize, and I'm at, it's the third paragraph on the right side, Le'olam, and forever these holy tzaddikim, these chassidim of the highest level, that are connected with bonds of love and light to the highest love, this quality of most exalted chesed, and they doresh, they demand always tovat kol ha'adam, the goodness of all humankind, kol ha'yetzur. And that's what their whole activity is. And but with this, they're also connected deeply into the needs of Israel in all ways, in every possible thing. And they are the ones who are truly, then I'm on the left side of the top of the left, heim hamatim klapei chesed. They are the ones that are sending forth chesed. They're like chesed machines. Ohavim letzadek et habriot. They love making righteous all the creations. Ve'einam chafatzim lechavam. And they won't say anything negative. They love righteousness and they hate wrongdoing. They are dvekim. Here's what I refer. That's what I wanted to show you. Dvekim b'midato shel Avraham Avinu. That's part of us, then we are connected to the soul of Avraham Avinu, and from the broad love for the whole creation, also mitkaneset ahava nifla'a leIsrael bilvavam. Also within them, they also have a wondrous love of Israel in their heart, and they have this beautiful integration of the universal and the personal, And then he continues with that this level of love and people with that level of consciousness and that level of intentionality, that's what Avraham Avinu was guiding us to. And so we're encouraged to really grow this within ourselves. Hayat Tzemach Hashem leGaon veleTif Eret. The Sharamo, and then we'll truly be sprouting godliness in the greatest possible way. So I bless us. Let's take a little break now. I bless us that as Israel, because this is really, right? It's really like the issue. How do we express our nationalism and our Israelite such in such a way that we never lose a war, that we're successful, and we're not, but with this capacity to love all humankind as well.
How does a man be able to survive when he has such pure thoughts?
It's a very interesting question. All accounts are that he was extraordinarily focused, extraordinarily present, extraordinarily productive. What I'm referring to, though, is these notebooks. I mean, he wrote some, you know, it's not a coincidence, I think, that in his Jerusalem period, we have the least of this sort of notebook writing it. But because he was also writing the entire Talmud, going through writing the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam on the entire Talmud that started the whole project, Mishnah, Halacha Brura. And he was dealing as the chief rabbi with all sorts of everything, and he was writing letters. And what we have is the letters, because they kept copies, and so they've been collected, some not yet, but we have like four volumes of the letters. And when you see what he's engaged with and who he's talking to about what, and you know, and then he went to Israel, he went to the States to raise money for Israel. He was there for 10 months in 1924. So he really, like, he wasn't like away from life in any way. And he was dealing with the most difficult halachic issues because he was the chief rabbi. So the most difficult things were coming to him. And he had around him, his students were, the great lights who could recognize his light and were liberated and free enough from their narrowness that they were living, you know, in the larger Torah, even though they were like Aryeh Levin, the Tzaddik of Jerusalem, who was dealing with the prisoners, the Nazir, and a few other people. It's an amazing time, but that was the gift of his teaching. Part of the gift is that he seemed to do it. They have stories of when he walked and they would throw paint on him and worse, the Haredim, when they were going crazy about him. I mean, it hurt him terribly, pride and certain things, but he didn't... He got angry, not to say he never got angry. There's a few times he got angry, and I have to think of when. And I'll tell you next week when we're dealing with good and evil. But he certainly, it's not like he was a wimp and just, you know, that. He was fiery. He could be fiery with the British. When 1929, when that happened, he was the main spokesperson. He could be fiery, like crazy, an angel among men. Please get that book. And read it. You'll really enjoy it.
You say he was instrumental in getting the Balfour Declaration together? What was that? How did that work?
It's one of my... When I discovered this, I was so blown away.
Yeah.
I was so blown away. All right, goes like this. This is only, you know, people... Okay, every Balfour Declaration, Chaim Weizmann. Right? Mm-hmm. The scoop is this. Okay, so here, so the Nazir knows, right? So the Nazir says... The 9th of Av breaks out the First World War, the land of Israel is conquered, and there was the Balfour Declaration, Eretz Yisrael for Israel, and he says, Hatchalta de Geula. This is the beginning of the Geula.
Okay.
As which is, you know, Kabbalistic terms for all of that. And he also knew that Rav Kook happened to be in Europe on this day because he was invited to speak to the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, the large rabbinical assembly in Europe, and to join the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, the Torah sages. They had heard all sorts about things about him. He was like 49 years old, 39 when he came to Israel, now he was 49 years old, and all the elder rabbis of Europe, I mean, some people thought this, some people thought that, and you know, nobody knew quite what to think. They knew that he was Zionism. He was like, this was his coming to the headquarters, the main conference. It only happened once every few years, and he was going to address them. And in his address, he had the goal. He didn't want to leave Israel, but he thought that because of his being there and his koach shichnua, power of convincing and conviction. He was very, he could very, you know, he really, people met him and he talked to them, they were transformed. And so he decided to leave Israel. Mm-hmm. And he was going to talk to the rabbis, and perhaps the goal would have been that much of the opposition to Zionism that was held by these European rabbis, he would have addressed and been able to unlock. He knew the language, he had the authority, enough of them could have been touched by his presence and his teaching, that they could have, a lot of them dropped, and then they would have started sending people to Israel. At least 50% of them, let's say, who wouldn't have. So Aryeh Levin said specifically, when the light gets too much, Amalek steps forth. Mm-hmm. And Berlin, Rav Kook showed up in this meeting, it was going to be in Germany, August 1914, World War I breaks out. The meeting never happens. He's arrested, 2 days later goes to Switzerland. At the same time, the Nazir is arrested and he goes into a camp and he meets his master in Kabbalah that introduces him to another level of depths in the Kabbalah and begins a very profound journey in his being a Nazir.
Where was the Nazir?
He's Rav Kook's main student.
No, where was he?
He was in studying for his PhD with Hermann Cohen in Germany, in university.
Okay.
And he's from the family of the Chafetz Chaim and stuff, right? So they're both there, and the war breaks out, and he is exiled to Switzerland. He also is exiled to Switzerland a little later, and Rav Kook right away goes to Switzerland.
So they were sent to Switzerland?
They had to flee Germany, and they, as Russian citizens, they were Russian citizens. They had to flee, and they found refuge in Switzerland.
Okay.
And Rav Kook is in Switzerland, and the Nazir meets him there, and he hears him pray, and he says, "I was transformed and became a different person." I think I told you this story, so I'm just doing it fast. The same time, Rav Kook, then a year and a half later, is invited to be the rabbi in London. There's an Orthodox synagogue, whatever it's called, and he comes there with the condition that he'll leave as soon as the war is over. He shows up late 1916, early 1917. The Ottoman Empire at that same time breaks down in Israel. Beersheba was the last battle. And the British mandate is now meeting in London to decide the fate of this area that they've now in their jurisdiction. And they are hearing Chaim Weizmann speak, Sir Chaim Weizmann maybe by that point, who had given them something with powder keg and they felt, you know, they indebted. And he was saying, he was speaking for the Zionists, give it to the Israel, you know, whatever, the Jewish agency, I don't know what format it was called then, but give it to them, give it to them. And these were all, you know, biblical Christians in that circle, and they were touched by that, and they felt, yeah. But then what happened? In June, in May 1917, the rich Jews of London, England, a Montefiore, a Rothschild, a Montague, and who else? The rich British Jewish assimilated families, they wrote a letter to the committee, which was published, saying not to take the claim of the Zionists seriously.
Oh dear.
That we are British citizens of Mosaic descent, and nothing in the past is now relevant to the future, and that language, mimicking what was in Germany, that attitude. It's a fascinating document. I'm not quoting it, to read it. And when that happened, the whole thing deflated, because if this is what the rich, and one of them is a member of parliament who signed on this letter. So when the committee got that submission, who are they going to listen to? Chaim Weizmann with the Polish Yiddish accent? Or Sir Montague and Lord Rothschild? So the whole thing, everybody's depressed. Rav Kook is in London. He writes on Shabbat Parshat Ba'alotecha, which is in June, a letter that he says should be read at every synagogue, and was published, and the letter said, and it's about two or three pages, it's in there, to the nations of the world and to those who had cut the heart out of the Jewish people, it's time now to do the right, to undo the injustice that has been done and to give back the land of Israel to the children of Israel fully, no compromise whatsoever, completely, and so forth.
So he's pushing equity and righteousness here.
And he says it's now time to do that, and in doing so it'll be a great blessing to all existence. And it's a fascinating letter, and it's also in that book, and it's also online. Read it. And not only that, he also initiates a letter writing campaign that all the Jews in all these synagogues write letters to the Balfour Committee. And while the author, the British Jews rabbis in London who were established, he just walked in, they didn't want to participate in this because they don't want to, you know, the Rothschilds and Montagues, they were paying for those shuls. He was like liberated from all that, and he started a letter writing campaign getting all the regular London Jews to write this letter, to the point that then in the next month when it was being discussed, there was even one guy in the parliament who said, in arguing for the Zionist cause, well, who should we listen to about the connection to the land of Israel and the people of Israel? Should we listen to the opinion of, you know, his Sir Montague, who was the Jewish member, assimilationist member of parliament, or the honored reverend rabbi who has expertise on this matter historically and spiritually? And or is it the rabbi? And that's the language. Wow. And that's what's quoted in the British. You can read it in their Hansard, whatever they call the British moments of their discussions. And so the Balfour Declaration was in. By November, it passed. It's safe to say, if he hadn't done this, quite likely it would not have. I mean, who knows? But quite likely not. And then when it did, there was a great celebration, and he wrote this beautiful poem to the King of England. And so he really saw history bringing the Geula here, because there's also this other thing holding all the Jews back. Do you know what it is? The three oaths.
It's what?
The three oaths. That's what the Orthodox Jews were holding back. There's this medrash that the Satmars picked up and made holy, even though it's a little medrash. It's from Shir Shirim. I think I mentioned this last week. If not, I'll mention it. It's worth mentioning again. That it says in the Gemara Ketubot that when we left Israel, that we took three oaths, that we're not going to go storm the walls to get back, we're not going to create war to come back, and the nations of the world took the oath not to make us suffer too much in exile. And the religious Jews took that as a thing against Zionism, that you can't go against the nations of the world to return. When the Balfour Declaration happened, and then when the San Remo Convention put it into the League of Nations, and Rav Kook was invited to that ceremony announcing that, he said, any fear of this oath is now gone, because the nations of the world are now, we're not doing it against the nations of the world. And they wrote pamphlets and books about that. It's in here. It's in here. So this is what they were speaking about at that time. And
so these three oaths were not to go against the nations of the world?
Not to storm the walls of Israel to return, not to go again, not to create war against the nations of the world in order to return. And the third oath was on their side, that they wouldn't make us suffer too much. Some people say, but we hadn't had the Shoah yet, so, by the, you know, who knows. But that's, it's a fascinating
thing. Just notwithstanding clause, that's all that was.
You know, right, but it's in Gemara Ketubot. It's like, I'm not making this up, right? It's in Gemara Ketubot. And it's what the rabbinic leaders were taking seriously. And the Satmar, and that whole anti-Zionism, that's what they're based on. He wrote a whole book glorifying these three oaths in the beginning of the 20th century, and that's what their foundation of the theology of the antis. Because they can't just say it, without, they have to find the source in the Torah. It's in these three oaths that Rav Kook is the main voice for saying, you know, it's undone. And he saw it happen, and he participated in the history. So that's how the Balfour Declaration.
It's a great story.
You know, it's it's, you know, when I learned all the details of that story, I started to think of him as the Jewish spiritual holy Forrest Gump, being at the right place at the right time.
Yes. And it happened kind of organically. The nations agreed.
Three oaths are actually kind of happening at the same time, right? The Ottoman Empire has fallen apart. Bolshevism is taking over, so the Cossacks aren't necessarily running through the streets of Russia killing us. And the English aren't suffering too many.
But the three oaths really are gaining that which is so deep in our core that we would excuse ourselves for everything. We don't want our neighbor to beat us or berate us, so we humble ourselves, like dying in a trouble, it wasn't.
It was Galut mentality, it was Galut, it's all Galut values and Galut behavior, and Rav Kook is the transition, you know, out of Galut. If we didn't have, if he wasn't there and offering everything that he offered and creating what he created, there was not a rabbinic figure of note enough that could single-handedly create this entire new fusion. Mm-hmm. And so Baruch Hashem, I mean, it was a gift from God. But that was, he was conscious about that. He was returning, and in this metaphor, the fact that when Herzl died, that's what he makes a speech about, is about the death of Mashiach ben Yosef and the process of Mashiach ben David. He represents the beginning of the Mashiach ben David return, not the completion of it, but he was the Kohen Gadol of the temple that was to be. Jabotinsky, who he saved his life a few times, said, you know, nobody cares what I think about anything Jewish, but if it was up to me, if I could vote for you for be the Kohen Gadol, I would vote for you.
Well, you know, this is very interesting because this last week's parasha, Devarim, Moses is talking to the people and laying out everything that they've done. And then we get these descriptions of peoples that the Israelites have conquered, but the people have crumbled from within before they even got there in some significant way. So it was almost as if a similar kind of thing was happening, you know, when the Ottoman Empire started to crumble. It's almost like a...
Yeah, they're explicit that this is all the process of history, which is the hidden Hanochi hastir et panai, I will hide my face, but deep down at moving history is this unfolding, and this is the narrative that's moving history. And as crazy as that seems, you know, a lot of people in Jerusalem believe it. Let's put it that way. It's really, it's not just, it's having huge impact on Israel. We're not, you know, and we can't deny it.
How do you feel? Do you think that we're in history?
Do what?
Do you feel that way also?
The fact that the return to the land of Israel is the return to the land of Israel, you know, the land of the 12 tribes and all that is what it is, then that's, you know, Rav Kook was the one who tried to bring everybody to Hebron in 1922. And today he would, you know, his son was not a distortion of him. His son is very much his student. And that aspect, Rav Kook would have done exactly the same thing. Perhaps in certain cases they may have been more, but you know, they weren't. I was here when it was so sweet, before it got violent, and everybody was enjoying everybody, and everybody was happy for all the work, and all the settlements. There was no fences, and you know, these religious Zionists were Arab lovers, and the great stuff. But you know, things have gotten poisoned. But the fact that the land of Israel is for the children of Israel, along with, not to mean anybody, there's room for everybody here. Nobody has to be kicked out for us to be, but it's for us to be here. That's the will of God, and that seems to be, you know, it's impossible to read this any other way and limit it to, you know, the 48 borders. Mm. So that's, if you ask me, but don't quote me in Tel Aviv, because that could get me into trouble.
The dichotomy is that, was it 1904 that you read us last week, that he's quoting the state of Israel.
Yeah.
And that's our official name. And when Lee brought that up, it isn't the only state, by the way, that is the state of.
Okay.
But that aside, what I was reading, it's specific to the state of Israel because it stopped us from defining as Hamas Israel or Bene Israel. This makes it political.
Oh, yeah.
The state of Israel.
Yeah.
Rather than this is our homeland and this is where we should be. That's just.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This is a definite. This is totally dead.
And so if you follow that world, there's been a split in the religious Zionist world. You know, sort of after the passing away of Tzvi Yehuda, and it was led by a rabbi whose name is Reb Tau. And he split when the yeshiva wanted to set up a teacher's college as part of their program. He said, no, we should be pure Torah, the Shema. And he was such a strong, influential person, he went and created his own thing, and it's not two things. And he was such a big Torah scholar and everything that and he's such an expert on Rav Kook. His stuff on Rav Kook is amazing, and he is a big teacher of the Torah that the will of the children of Israel is expressed in the Knesset is equivalent. The government is equivalent to a religious form and needs to be understood as that and related to as that. And the one that we have, the one that we're set at now, is this face of it, and it, we need to understand it in these terms. And you can read more about him, Rav Tau, and he's that fusion of politics and everything. I mean, they're
that's the physical basis.
They're doing it. They're doing it, but it was really, it used to be that there were, who was it? They were also always in charge. My favorite was when Rabbi Lichtenstein wanted to be in the government or the Meimad. And they asked him, what ministry do you want? You know, religion, this and that. No, medicine, the hospitals. That's what we need to help people. So there's, you know, a lot to say, but it's, all right. We can go on forever about that. And let's refocus. Here, if you have any other questions, though, please tell me. I'm happy to, you know, it can be quite informal, really. But it's good to context. But again, to the Nazir, because the Nazir, in saying to understand Rav Kook, there are three basic principles, five basic principles. The first one we did actually both of them yesterday. Last week it may have been like too much at one time, but Hakodesh, everything is holy. The second, Chayut HaOlamit, everything is alive. Everything is holy and everything is living. The third one is the one that we have on the sheet there. It's page number, I don't know what page it is in the Hebrew. The first one that we have there doesn't exist in the English. So, but I'll do it in the Hebrew, but you want to have the Hebrew in front of you. I'll do it in the English. But it's... you see where it says Achdut HaKolelet?
Yes, five principles of Rav Kook.
Well, what page is it on the bottom?
This is my notes.
Oh, you know, but Achdut HaKolelet is what I want to draw your attention to. That even if you're just listening, that you have...
Everything is holy is the first one.
The page with it. Everything is holy is the first one. The second is everything is alive. Uh-huh. And now the third one is everything is one. Ha'achdut ha'kolelet is what the Nazir called it, the all-inclusive oneness. Using, you know, he quotes a piece from the Zohar where everything is one and so forth.
Do you think normal humans would access that oneness by understanding how everything is interconnected?
It's part of that, certainly part of the, yes, of course, I think so, for sure.
Because otherwise it's very difficult to understand what you mean by that.
So here's what Rav Kook means. So the Nazir, I'm looking at the Hebrew handout from today that starts with session 3. And there where it says Ha'achdut HaKolelet, which, because your pagination is different than what I have in front of me, is where I'm going to be reading. Page 2. They're numbered, actually, I think, no? But there it says Achdut HaKolelet, and Rav Kook writes like this, and I'm just, this is a shortened version of But this is the first piece that the Nazir chose to introduce this idea. And he says like this, Kol Ahavaya, all existence, he, Klulahi Benekuda Echad. I'll go into the English, but all of the Havaya, Havaya is the Yud He Vav He word that we can use. Havaya is the transmutation of God into existence. So the entire existence, Klulahi Benekuda Echad, is all joined together, included in one point. All this greatness that depicts itself for us, all the multiplicity, all the wealth, all the difference, all the distance, all the separation, all is actually relative in relation to the great smallness of our consciousness. And then he goes on, Hagodel, Harochev, the greatness, the expansion, the heights, the depths, the supernals, the sparks, the renewal, the fruitfulness, the flows, all the life of song and intellect and the growth of that, constant lightning bolts and renewed lights, instant illuminations that come momentarily. Bekol Ela, all these experiences in all their greatness are in truth just one shining point. Nekudata Havaya, the point of existence, Netef Shel Nitzutz Elohi, it is a flow of the godly spark, the spark of God. And that's how he tries to say it. Hakol Hu Rak Nekuda Ze'ira Echad, everything is just one small point. It's small in relation to the Creator. It's not possible at all to draw, imagine it's non-oneness. Hakol hu rak, and listen to this language. Hakol hu rak dugmat atom echad leumat or ein sof. Everything is like one atom in relation to the infinite light. And he says this understanding, this conjecture, brings us closer to the clear truth. There shouldn't be a period after Be'ilut HaEmet, it's one thought. The clear truth from and clarity of truth from all the hazayot, from all the illusions and the false visions about separations. Okay, so it's the top of page 3. This understanding that everything is just one atom, which of course is what science says, right? This isn't spiritual talk, this is scientific talk now. Everything is one atom. That gives us clarity of understanding and protection, as it were, from, he says, from kol minei ha-hazayot, all sorts of false visions of things that are separated and distant worlds, and changing times and periods and epochs and circles of creation. That looks like it's all different, it looks like it's all multiplicity, but when we understand that Hakola Havaya Klulahi Benekuda Echad, the Creator is one, made that sense that this entire thing is also one point. And then the very next piece, this is also not in English, you see where it's Aleph Taf Taf Kuf Bet? Okay. The final purpose of existence is the revelation of the light of God in the highest way, in one supernal achdut elyona, one highest unification, that there will be no spark of life in which its yeshness, its being, will not rise up to this highest level of the supernal oneness. And then, as yeha ilui shel kol havaya kula zoreach bechol prat veprat bifnei atzmo. This is where the personal and the universal is combined, and then it will be that the elevation of all existence and will shine out and illuminate in every single particular in and of itself, as for the example of a mirror, that everything that stands before it is illuminated and seen. And there's no end to this great happiness that happens when every prat, every detail in life is infused. With the singular light of God and this Ardut Elyona, and then, but he explains here history, and this is Kabbalah in history, Mishum Kach, and because of this, the necessity for every detail to also be infused with light, Mishum Kach, Sricha Hi HaHavaya Lehit Pared Batchila. Existence has at the beginning, or at some point, it has to separate into these particulars, into the smallest possible portions, the chalakim hayoter ktanim. Do you want to see where we are? Is it? And we need shvirot gdolot. We need great breakages in order to bring forth into actuality. We need great breakages to create the hafrada, the separation of the points. But after their tzichtzuch and zichuch, their refinement and their shining, then they'll all together join into the great yesh, v'hakol male or Hashem v'kvodo, and then everything will be filled with the light of God and God's glory. And so here is how he explains the dichotomy, that, but it's the beauty of the picture, that the whole is brought to its wholeness by every particular expressing itself to its fullness. It's not by, you know, submitting to the whole or disappearing in the whole. It's by each of us being our most whole self. That you know, so it's the perfect win-win. Because the God of good would not want anything less than that. And here Rav Kook describes it. The next piece that's within this section, that the Nazir brought these little portions to try to illustrate what Rav Kook means by Achdut HaKolelet, is in the English, that you have the smaller concepts, the ones that start with the wisdom of the whole, and it's inside, I'll tell you, it's
I think I'm 225.
Did I write there? Well, I should actually now write what page. Oh, wait, I wrote a note for myself. Sorry. 225? How do you know?
Which one are you going to read?
The revelation. Here it is. The revelation of unity.
It's
the third last page. It's the third last page. Okay, that's it. That's the revelation of unity. Yeah, 225. So that's a lesson. That's.
Oh, I read your first paragraph. Well, I translated the first paragraph you read.
Okay.
So, but when I saw it,
good for you. All right, good. Good for you. Wonderful. All right, good. 225. The revelation of unity. So it's the Rav Kook starts in a piece. Perfect. Hakriya b'shem Hashem echad. The call, and the call is referring to is the Shema. That's when we say the Shema morning and evening. Okay. So somebody else can read then. This is the English. Please. Do we went all around, right?
The affirmation of unity.
The affirmation, yeah.
The affirmation of the unity of God aspires to reveal the unity in the world, in man, among nations, and in the entire content of existence, that any dichotomy between action and theory, between reason and the imagination, even the dichotomies experienced will be unified through a higher enlightenment, which recognizes their aspect of unity and compatibility. In the content of man's life, this is the entire basis of holiness. The life of the spirit is the life of eternity, in which the temporal and the eternal merge in one whole.
Well, we just hold on, just stop there. Let's absorb it. When we say affirmation that God is one, what we're trying to do is to reveal the unity in the world, in humankind, in nations, in the entire content of existence, and a unity in such a way that has no dichotomy between action and theory, between reason and imagination. And he says this can be experienced through a higher enlightenment which recognizes this unity and compatibility, and that's what being holy is about, is coming into that level of consciousness. The next paragraph.
This is the most august thought amongst the great thoughts that man's intellectual capacity can conceive. It is revealed to him through his reciprocity to his spiritual connection. It may take him to the height of revelation of the divine by the way of reason, the knowledge called face to face.
Ah, that's what, it's funny. I knew this was face to face. It's been coming up a lot lately. I knew we were at one. In Hebrew, it's so amazing. Zot hi hamachshava hayoter gdola shebemachshavot haanakiyot. So this is the most largest, greatest thought of all the gigantic thoughts. Shel koach hachoshev, that the power of thought asher lehaadam, that any human being can have.
So
much more beautiful. Well, yes, thank God. And this is what. Right, and then, but then he says, this goes, me'ora, you see that line that comes to be revealed within us, al kol kisharon ha-gilui ha-ruchani, through our capacity for spiritual illumination, we have to develop our meditation. This is, you know, the guide is meditation, spiritual practice. You know, you have to be, Rav Kook has, one of the great things he got into trouble with is saying, to have spiritual clarity, it's very important to have your body healthy. And we should spend time taking care of our bodies, and then suggesting, so you can imagine how that world quaked, thinking that, you know, gym class is now going to be part of yeshiva. And but he was also referring at that time, in some say, to the need to create an army, and it was also a code for that, and it was also true. But anyways, it's we have to work kisharon, we have to develop our Gilui Ruchani, our spiritual capacities, to the point of Hitgalut Elohut, revelation of godliness. And here's where the Kabbalah is, Beorach Seichel, in the path of the mind. This is, that's graspable. We all have a Seichel, so this is what they speak about. Ve'yidia, and the knowledge of Panim El Panim, face to face. And the word Panim El Panim is Pnim El Pnim, interior. To interior, it's and he has another place here that we see the oneness when we see the inside of things. The differences are on the outside level. What brings us to be able to see the oneness is when we can all come into the inner level of that and understand that. The next piece. That is a nice tie-up of both sections is the second last page in the smaller collection, and it's a love for the world. We're going to read paragraph 1 and paragraph 4 and 5 at least, and so it's the one that says the wisdom of the holy on the cover. It's the same one we just had, I'm sorry. Sorry, the same one we just had, just further along. A love for the world.
Okay, where's that?
Okay.
It's 227.
Well, thank you.
It says 227. We were on 225. All right, so let's, please. Yeah, great souls.
Great souls cannot disassociate themselves from the most universal concerns. all they desire and aspire for is the universal good. Universal in its comprehensiveness, universal in its full width, height, and depth. But the whole is constituted of numberless particulars, particular individuals and particular communities. The whole cannot achieve its highest fulfillment except through the perfection of its particular individuals and its particular communities, whether small or large, of which it is constituted.
Okay, stop there for a second. So it's interesting, the Nazir put this piece, I mean, it really fits with the first half theme, but he puts this in the under the section of Achdut Kolelet, and that's what he's describing here. What's the implication of that then? If there is this overriding oneness, then we, our souls, can't dissociate from this. We can't just be concerned about a small part. And so that's why it's in this section. Let's stay practical. He goes quite spiritual in the first two, but look about a third, two-thirds of the way down. A love for all existence fills the hearts of the good and kindly ones among creatures, among humans. They yearn for the happiness of all. They hope that all may know light and joy. They draw into themselves the love for all existence, differentiated into its many forms of being, from the higher love for God, from the love of absolute total perfection in the cause of all who created and sustains everything. So that's a tremendous level to be at. However, so let's read two paragraphs later. When, whose turn is it, please?
When those love-possessed people see the world, especially living creatures, full of quarrels, hatred, persecution, and conflicts, they yearn with all their being to share in those aspirations that move life towards comprehensiveness, unity, peace, and tranquility. They feel they know that the nearness of God, which they yearn, can only lead them to joining themselves with all and for the sake of all.
Okay, so that's in the general, so that's a beautiful thing, right? That we want to join ourselves with all and for the sake of all. And now he takes it down one level further. I might as well share it because it's a. You want to continue?
When they confront the human scene and find divisions among nations, religions, parties, and with goals in conflict, they endeavor with all their might to bring all together, to mend and to unite. With the healthy instinct of their noble souls, which soar with a divine thrust above all confinements, they feel that the individuals need to be enhanced, that the best of societies must rise to greater heights, and to enter with all the affluence of their individuals into the light of the universal life. They want that every particular shall be preserved and developed, and that the collective whole shall be united in abounding peace.
Right, let's just breathe that in for a second. That every particular shall be preserved and developed, and that the collective whole should be united and abounding in peace. That's such an integrated vision, such an integrated perspective. And, you know, if we were to make, social decisions and all sorts of economic decisions and everything based on these principles, we would actually be able to create a world of chesed and a world of... It would be quite different, and that's what Rav Kook is encouraging, and that's what Israel is supposed to do. And we're getting there. But... What?
Not with Bibi, you would.
Sorry?
Not with Bibi.
But yeah, it's all temporary. I mean, yes. There'll be, it's interesting though that we need to create extraordinary wealth in order to understand that we can share it. So that seems to be part of what we're going through now. But our capacity to share it, I think, will grow to the capacity we grow it, and we're growing it. So the next one, please, Melanie.
When they confront their own people, to whose happiness, continuity, and perfection they feel committed in all the depth of their being, and find it splintered, broken into parties and parties, they cannot identify themselves with any particular party. They desire to unite themselves with the word on him to set him on the right.
No, it's the other way. It goes the other way.
Where is it? They desire to unite themselves with
the what?
With the all. Wait a minute. En lachem?
No, that's it.
All right, so it's actually only a few words.
So?
With the all, for the sake of it, but we just read that. No, no, you have it. You see where it has the fourfold song?
P28.
I have it. You see fourfold song?
No.
No.
Constant renewal? After the, it's actually on the other side, in mine is facing, oh shoot, it's like a two-page difference. There's a, next time I want the numbers on it.
Yeah, 228, you're right, it's way over.
Two over.
After 218, I guess it depends on
the came song. Earlier, depends on, but it's the one that has a fourfold song.
Only with the all.
Right. So read the two in context. They desire and to unite themselves with the whole people, only with the all-embracing whole, in all its fullness and good. I'm sorry for the...
They desire to unite themselves with the whole people, only with all-embracing whole, in all its fullness and goodness.
All right, so that's what the idea is, that the when we confront our own people and we find it splintered, broken into parties and parties, the Asher of Cook, he never joined any party. He created one, it didn't go very far. But they cannot identify themselves with any particular party. Not I'm a Shasnik, I'm a Visnik. All of those are old school. They're not what we're meant to be doing. They desire to unite themselves with the whole people for the sake of the whole. And the understanding that identifying primarily with a limited political party as your agent for bringing light and goodness to the world is not the form of Israel.
Just to find yourself as Jewish, that's what he's saying. Instead of all these political parties, just to find yourself as Jewish, is that what he's saying?
Well, no, none is. It's also, you know, where it's you can also be yourself. You wear whatever stock you want to wear. White stockings. You want to wear a blue talis. You can be yourself. But he has another one, which it's in a tremendous, tremendous poem, which I should maybe we'll look at some point. It's only in Hebrew, but there's a few lines of it. And it's like his call to the Jewish world. And he speaks to all the various parties and points of view and says to each one of them, but the basic punchline, he says, the focus needs to be, when you're in a particular group, not what is missing in another group, but what you have to offer to the other whole. And if each person only looks at what they have to offer to the other groups and not how they can get everybody to be like them or anything like that, but that's the focus, then we can each be ourselves and we'll find that we'll weave a tremendous tapestry of giving to each other and create the most glorious version, you know, the world that was described at the beginning. You know, where
that's not what your country can do for you.
But what do you but take it, yeah. But that's what he's saying, is the point of every particular is how it can contribute to the whole and how it can help to see what's lacking. See what's missing for somebody and how you can provide it, not anything, it's about giving. And giving lovingly. And so on. So I bless us. The very last piece that we have here, I'll just read you the headlines of it, because it's an extraordinary piece that is not translated, and it's a good one to end on. And I'll just you can almost hear it meditatively, because it's and the Nazir puts this as the one. He says, Ish yichidi, each person needs to find themselves in themselves מוצא עצמו בעצמו, ואחר כך הוא מוצא את עצמו בעולם המסבבו. And then you find yourself in the world around you. The ציבור מוצא את עצמו בעצמו, it finds itself, the collective finds itself in itself, and afterwards it finds itself באנושיות כולה. So the world around you, which is your society, your people, your tzibur. The tzibur finds itself in itself, and afterwards it finds itself in enoshiyut kula, all humankind. Enoshiyut finds itself in itself first, and afterwards it finds itself in the world. And the world finds itself in itself, and then it finds itself in olamim kulam. And the universe in all its totality finds itself in itself, and afterwards it finds itself hachlala hasug sugita elyona shel ha'olamiyut, the all-inclusive highest beingness of all worldliness. Something to describe like how the entire world finds all existence. He's trying to just, there's no words to describe the levels which he's trying to describe here. Worldliness finds itself in itself, and afterwards, it motza et atzma behachosen hamale, in the full treasure, behaor ha'elyon, in the supernal light, in the multitudes of life and the source of all their oceans, in the orah ha'elohit, in the godly illumination. And then, the punchline, az mitachdot kol ha'karot, halalu yachad, all these levels of recognition, the personal, the societal, humankind, the planet, planets, existence, all these levels join together, v'chozrot v'na'asot chativa echad, and they become one collective in which its greatness, its hugeness, its endlessly power, strong, its particularness is its protection, it's its treasure, its every part of it is completely self-expressed and fully expressing, and shetef ha'chaim holech v'shotef, and the flow of life is then flowing and flowing, ve'or ha'kodesh holech v'mitgaber, and the light of holiness, the holy light then just grows and is overcomes everything. Visharim kecholalim kol ma'aynei bach, and we all sing and dance, all whose roots are in you, quoting Tehillim. So I bless us that we really understand that we are in ourselves, and then we're in all of these levels. And
how's that different from a four-fold song?
It's another way of saying, you know, with from different, sure. That's, it's just a different poem expressing much the same thing. And, but it's, this wasn't even written as a poem. Neither was, it was, this is in his diary. It's just written in an ecstatic state. And so thank you so much for, and if anybody would like to go